Good morning. Today's reading is taken from The Japanese Wife by Kunal Basu, beginning at page 9. The boy found the kites hidden in a dark passage of the house. Unable to lift the box, he pushed it along its narrow edge until it landed on the floor with a thud. Snehamoy helped him take out the kites, lifting each delicately by its staff, and spread them out on the courtyard. The woman came out of the kitchen and exclaimed, "When will you fly them, Kaku?" "Fly?" The idea hadn't occurred to him, but seemed to appeal to everyone. "Your Kaku doesn't know how to string a kite, let alone fly it. You'll have to call your friends over." His aunt got the ball rolling. The widow smiled in approval. They fixed the day of celebration for Biswakarma, the god of machines, to be their kite-flying day. But first they'd have to be ready with rolls of line to fly the kites, lines sharpened with a coating of finely ground glass to cut those of their rivals. A suitable field must be found, one with a good view of the horizon and free of trees to prevent the lines getting tangled up in the branches. Their hearts pounded at the thought of a kite fight. Like a sensible teacher, Snehamoy set the boy down with his exercise book. If each kite takes 500 feet of line to fly, how many feet would 20 kites take? The boy frowned. Only 500 feet for each kite. What if they get tangled with others during a fight and keep circling away, needing more and more? The two spent a whole afternoon asking the neighbours for empty glass bottles. Snehamoy's aunt smashed them in her kitchen, then ground the shards in a pestle, pricking her thumb in the process. Glue was added to the glass granules, and a touch of vermilion dye to have the lines stand out against the blue sky and the clouds. After returning from school, Snehamoy joined the boy in stringing lines from one end of their courtyard to the other. Then, like seasoned workers, they wrapped their palms in soft cotton cloth, took lavish dips in the pail of abrasive, and went from one end of a line to the other, carefully applying a uniform layer over it. In the end, they sat back in the kitchen and admired the brilliant maze, turning their courtyard into a field of red pepper. For days, pedalling to and from school, Snehamoy heard the village buzzing with the impending kite fight. Rival groups of boys formed teams and were spurred on by a shopkeeper who was offering his Indian kites free to anyone willing to brave the foreign invasion. Yet, on the day of the grand contest, as the first of the Japanese kites came out of the box and heaved by its flyers went up over the school building, there was a pall of silence. It was a giant Baramon, devil-faced, crushing the helmet of a samurai warrior between its awesome teeth. Scarlet and ochre, it hung still, face up, refused to be cowed by the stiff breeze. Snehamoy saw his aunt and the widow watching the show, both enthralled. He felt proud of Miyagi's kites and handed out the last, a Nagasaki fighter, simple in appearance but agile. Then the local fighter came out from behind the clouds, one with a long shimmering tail. For a brief moment, the Indian and the Japanese eyed each other from respective corners of the horizon. As the sparring started, they zipped in towards each other like low-flying combat planes. The blue Nagasaki, with the sky as its cover, had a natural advantage. The homegrown red had the crowd behind it. By then the light was falling, and all the other kites had been pulled down, their lines rolled back, leaving the sky wide open for the final show. In a clear field, intentions were plain. The Nagasaki tried a deceptive loop, coming in from above and dipping over the other to set a trap. Reading the plan just in time, its rival wriggled out, managing to avoid contact. The crowd, exhausted by the day's excitement, cheered and groaned in turn. Snehamoy sat down on the grass, the boy holding onto his arm nervously. Like a seasoned warrior, the red climbed down from the clouds, almost touching the roofs of the village huts. Then, in a majestic move, it reversed its course and rose, cutting through the line of its enemy in one clean sweep, ending up, once again, as a speck in the sky. "Bukata! Gone!" The Nagasaki took a dip, its line sagging, and floated away. A group of boys chased after it, carrying long sticks like fishing rods. It flew past the school and over the paddy fields in gently rolling waves, then crossed the mudflats and floated over the Matla. For a brief moment, it stood paralysed in mid-river before taking the final plunge. Here ends the reading. Have a very good day.